Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down, my blood sugar is down, my weight's down, my health is up, my sleeping patterns are better, my metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out. Hello, America, and happy Monday. A busy weekend of news and a busy Monday of news. Just a little bit ago, Special Counsel Jack Smith asked the United States Supreme Court to rule on whether former President Donald Trump can be prosecuted on charges that he allegedly worked to overturn the 2020 election results. The judge in that case says he can, but the Trump campaign plans to go to a federal appeals court, and then that would take us all the way to the United States Supreme Court. Jack Smith, well, he wants to go right to the Supreme Court. Now, the earliest the Supreme Court could even consider the case would be early next year, January 5th, because that's when the next private conference for accepting cases is slated for. So absent an emergency petition, it will be early next year before we know whether the justices, the 9 justices, get involved. But that is a big case. It could have a profound effect on the 2024 election, a profound effect on the courts, and of course, a profound effect on Jack Smith's case. Now, over the weekend, there was also some pretty big fallout. The University of Pennsylvania president, she resigned after taking tremendous criticism for failing to fully repudiate anti-Semitism on her campus. Liz McGill stepped down under enormous pressure after a $100 million gift had been pulled from the university, and a lot of other questions came about. Now, while that's going on, the Harvard president, Claudine Gay, is facing similar questions. Not only is there a question about her answers and her approach to fighting anti-Semitism on the campus, there's also a question from some people about whether or not she plagiarized some information from something she wrote. That is increasing the pressure on her to resign as well. And that is 2 major universities in the middle of this anti-Semitism debate, both having fallout from the last few days. Now, we've got a great show to pick up on this very topic. Monica Crowley, former advisor to President Trump, former assistant secretary of the Treasury Department. Before that, a great Fox News and Washington Times columnist. And before that, an advisor to President Richard Nixon late in his life after he had left the presidency. She's going to join us. She'll weigh in on this and so much more, including the rising national debt and its aiders and abettors in Congress. That's always a great conversation. Then in the second part of the show, we're going to have Ilya Shapiro. He just wrote a great op-ed over the weekend looking at where the line is between free speech on campus and when it becomes conduct that can be regulated as threatening. And he really put a lot of thought into this. I think it's one of the smarter columns that I've seen done on this and the difference between speech and action. A really great debate. He, of course, joins us from the Manhattan Institute, where he does a lot of great work, one of the most published and respected academics there. So that is our show today. Monica Crowley, Ilya Shapiro, back to back. A lot of talk about anti-Semitism on college campuses, but we'll also hit the economy and so much other important stuff. Now, before we go, a quick reminder, we're just a few weeks away from Christmas. I do have a holiday guide out there on Just the News. It puts together all of the best offers from all of our partners, our sponsors, and our advertisers. So we've got you covered. All you got to do is go to justthenews.com and click on the holiday page. You're going to find gifts for everyone on your list, or maybe something for yourself, thanks to our sponsors, from EnviroCleanse, the Muzzle Stick, heat holders, and so many more. You'll get amazing deals that are for our listeners only, so don't stress. Beat the lines this holiday season. Go right to justthenews.com and click on the holiday page to get your shopping done. All right, when we come back, Monica Crowley up next. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you, because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000, or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. Angie's List is now Angie, A-N-G-I, the nation's largest home services marketplace, and they're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project is, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. That's what you want, right? I'm thinking about building out my basement in my cabin. I've been perusing Angie, looking for just the right contractor to get it done the way my wife and I want it done. Now, Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and right in your neighborhood. That's important, right? You can do comparative shopping. Get started today at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today. The app and the website are free to use. Angie.com or the Angie app. Go check it out today. All right, folks. Welcome back to the commercial break. Very excited to kick off the show today with this next guest. He's one of my best friends. Also, one of the most brilliant minds in all of America. Former Assistant Secretary to the U.S. Treasury and host of my favorite podcast, the Monica Crowley Podcast. It is Monica Crowley. Monica, good to have you back on.
Hey, John, it's great to be back with you. Thank you so much for having me.
It is an honor to have you on. We love all the work you do. Love your show. I wanted to start with this weekend, because there was some pretty dramatic fallout from what's really been a 5-10 year problem on college campuses, anti-Semitism. But the UPenn president, Liz McGill, ousted over the weekend. A second university leader who testified alongside Liz McGill is also in trouble at Harvard. Is this a moment of reckoning long awaiting?
Yeah, I really think it is. And I think it's really the tip of the iceberg. You know, there should be real ramifications for these individuals who sit atop our most elite institutions, not just in America, but the world. We're talking about Harvard. We're talking about the University of Pennsylvania. We're talking about MIT. But really, all of them have been so deeply infected by radicalism for decades now, John, right? So for anybody just now paying attention to this kind of raging anti-Semitism, you need to know that all of this has been going on for a very long time. The infection of Marxism, economic Marxism, political Marxism, cultural Marxism, this has been on the march in America for almost a century. Really, since the Russian Revolution began and the Kremlin decided that they needed to conquer the world, and the way they were going to do that was really by taking out the number one obstacle, which is the United States. This has been ongoing since the 1930s in America, where they have infiltrated our major institutions, including the entire academic world. They started at the university level, and now it goes all the way down to kindergarten. So this didn't just materialize out of thin air. The system that produced a Harvard president, Claudine Gay, or a Penn president, Liz McGill, who just stepped down over the weekend, this system has been deeply corrupted and infected with Marxism and anti-Semitism for a long time. So here is the challenge, Sean. Yes, this has been coming for a long time. McGill, I'm glad to have her scalp. I hope Claudine Gay and so many others go down in this wave as well. And the fact that this anti-Semitism has always been there percolating under the surface is deeply, deeply disturbing. But the problem here, John, is that all of these institutions all the way down are deeply infected. So they can swap out Liz McGill for another anti-Semitic communist woke nightmare at Penn, and you're going to have the same problem. We face a very big challenge here in essentially fumigating all of these institutions from the top down. You know, these anti-Semites are like bugs. You know, you step on one and there are 10 more where that came from. So this is going to require a major, major overhaul. And people like Bill Ackman, the hedge fund guy, and so many others who have pulled big money out of these institutions, that's what's gotten their attention, the money. Not the actual principle of being a raging anti-Semite, but the fact that Penn lost a $100 million gift. That's what gets their attention. Frankly, I don't even care what gets their attention as long as the attention is sustained over a period of time. And that's, we require all hands on deck for that.
Yeah, right. It would be easy to take a couple scalps and then say, let's go back to life as normal, but we can't, right? This hatred and intolerance has been festering for so long, and this is a moment to really eradicate it in a large way. I mean, anyone who supports Hamas is supporting hate. Anyone who supports Hamas is supporting supporting terrorism. And there can't be a moment now where you take the foot off the gas pedal. I think all of us who are fighting for to eradicate this hate, this is a moment where you have to double down, even as some of these resignations come. Do you see that energy still there, that people realize now that this is a rare moment to fight back and to really get rid of a series of sentiments that are poisoning our children's minds?
Yes, absolutely, because, you know, it's being brought to really big donors' attention, like a Bill Ackman, like a Leon Cooperman, who, you know, are appropriately outraged by this kind of rampant anti-Semitism. They seem shocked at not just that, but the overall anti-Semitism, rampant activism and radicalism on these college campuses, to which we, John, say, well, where have you been for the last,
right,
you know, many decades? Where have you been?
Yeah.
So this anti-Semitism has focused their attention and their minds on that particular issue, but they're also being awakened to all of this other Marxism and other forms of radicalism, the cesspool of hatred going on these campuses, and now they're starting to see it in other directions. That is a very good sign. And I think now is the opportunity for people like us, John, who report on the news, comment on the news, to focus everybody's attention on not just the anti-Semitism, but the lack of free speech against conservatives and so many others, the communism that is being taught, the indoctrination that's going on. This is our moment to really open the floodgates to the general public about what's gone on here. You know, it's similar to what happened during COVID, where parents weren't aware of what their K-12 students and children were being taught, and then COVID had them locked in the house, and parents were suddenly aware of
you're teaching my kid what?
Going on. Yes, exactly. So I think at the university level, this is opening a lot of eyes, and now it's our time to strike.
Yeah, there's no doubt. This is a moment where we can make some lasting change for the better if we do it. And if we could just get universities to go back to what they used to be good at, which was research and learning, that would be great, instead of all this political indoctrination that seems to have become the leading edge of their, at least the elite universities, focus. And it's really remarkable. I want to turn just to a second to the
budget, because in America, every year we've kind of kicked this can down the road. And really since the mid-2000s, only 20 years ago, we have added the vast majority of American debt for our entire country's history, about $25 to $28 trillion just in the last two decades. Some familiar faces there during that whole time: Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi, perhaps the queen and king of debt based on their tenure and the growth of it. Joe Biden clearly there for nearly all of the accumulation of the debt. Are we at a moment where Americans are ready to make this an issue in the election, saying no more debt? We're now hanging a millstone around our great-grandchildren.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the Uni Party is guilty. So people on both sides, obviously Democrats and the left, are huge, huge spenders. But we have had plenty of big spenders on our side as well over the years, which got us to this point. Nobody is willing to stand up and say no. I mean, a few. But, you know, you get into office and you realize you can vote yourself a raise out of the U.S. Treasury and give away huge favors to people in your district and state in order to get reelected. The entire system becomes deeply corrupt, and this is why we're closing in on $34 trillion in debt. And this year, probably going to run an annual deficit, John, of about $2 trillion. So, look, we got to put the brakes on this. And if we don't, the laws of economics are hard and fast. So the laws of economics are going to kick in here in pretty short order and force the decisions for us. And this is not going to be a pretty sight. The ramifications of, you know, hitting this debt wall are going to be atrocious for everybody in America. So, you know, the choice is going to have to be made soon. And yeah, it's going to be painful because everybody's been drunk on big spending for a long time.
Yeah.
But I think as an issue, you know, you're talking about it at Just the News. I'm talking about it on the Monica Crowley podcast, Steve Bannon on War Room. I mean, we're all directly speaking to this issue, putting the pressure on our elected representatives to put the brakes on this. And that means putting the pressure on the new speaker, Mike Johnson, who, you know, there's a lot of talk about a continuing CR in January for another year, get
Can
us through the election so we don't have to make hard choices. No, we're in an emergency now.
Yeah, it is extraordinary that that conversation would even bubble up, given the fact that Speaker Mike Johnson actually got his job because of a CR. It's just remarkable that that it would still be hanging around. And you're right, Marjorie Taylor Greene told us last week that it's very much on the table right now, which I think is really remarkable. Tomorrow, President Zelensky from Ukraine will be here. He'll meet with Mike Johnson. He'll be meeting with the president and others. I think there is a stark message that Republicans can deliver to the Ukrainian president. And there also could be a gesture the Ukrainian president could deliver, I suspect, the Republicans by maybe going down to the border and seeing the crisis that afflicts our country. What do you think comes of tomorrow's visit?
Well, it's going to be, I mean, Zelensky is coming to put the screws to our Congress. And by the way, he's also addressing the U.S. military today or tomorrow as well, which is equally as horrifying. He needs money. And the cash is drying up. He is horrified by that. But we as the American taxpayer, have sunk nearly $200 billion into this enterprise. And all it has proven, and Ukraine is clearly losing this battle, and all it's gotten us is a giant money laundering operation for the globalist elite. Yeah. They have enriched themselves at the expense of the American taxpayer, at the expense of driving our debt further into the ground, all from money laundering operations so Zelensky's wife can go shopping in Paris. I mean, I'm sorry, but that has been the absolute truth. All of the money, all of the weapons that we have sent, there has been zero accountability for any of it. We have not accounted for or audited a single dime that has gone over there. So it's been a huge slush fund. And Time Magazine, to their credit, a couple of months ago, I guess, did a whole expose on this where
they
you
did.
Had top Ukrainian officials saying this has been a giant slush fund for everybody and it's deeply corrupt. So no more money for Zelensky so his wife can go to Chanel in Paris. No more weapons going until, A, we've got a full accounting of everything that we've already sent, and B, a real plan for going ahead. Where is this money and where are these weapons gonna go? And you know, before we commit to anything. So I say not a single dime or a single gun or a single bullet going to Ukraine until we've got a full accounting.
I see a lot of heads in our audience probably nodding right now. They couldn't agree more with you. The clarity of your vision is so there. Your old boss is somebody who is rising in the polls, perhaps in historic fashion. In fact, today, Donald Trump up 51% in the Iowa caucus poll, the highest any candidate in the history of a caucuses has ever scored in that poll. He's also up in Michigan and in Georgia and nationally against Joe Biden. When you look out, what is the phenomenon that keeps Donald Trump so popular, even as Democrats and their machinery take so much time to try to take him down?
Yeah, you know, I was blessed to have seen the president on Friday at Mar-a-Lago. We spent some time together. He's in great shape. He is in a great mood. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he does it physically, emotionally, politically, the rest. He's a Superman. But I think the deep state, the uni party, military-industrial complex, the propaganda press, they cannot believe that this man is still standing. And not just standing, but thriving, as you say, leading in most, if not all, of the polls, nationally, state by state, and so on. They have thrown the kitchen sink at this man since he really started gaining traction in late 2015, so almost 8 years now. They have thrown everything at him, and they cannot believe that he is still upright and thriving. So expect this next year to be pretty horrible, because when you think at what they threw at him in 2020, from a crazy virus to the shutdown of the economy to burning down the country with Antifa and Black Lives Matter, rigging the election, January 6th, the whole slate to stop him and the America First agenda, we can only imagine what next year is going to be. So brace for that. But Donald Trump really is a phenomenon, and he is leading a movement. There is not a single other Republican, and they're all very accomplished leaders and very talented, but none of them are leading a movement. This is America First. This is a movement that Donald Trump founded and is riding the wave and embodies and symbolizes. So he's got a deep emotional bond with the voters, and that is something that is absolutely impossible for anybody else to overcome.
One last question for you, Monica. I wanted to look out, when you look out past the primaries, it looks like the president, probably former president, has the primaries in pretty good shape. He gains the nomination early. The trials are being thrown at him. There'll be more media furor trying to paint him as an extremist. That's been the new thing this past week. He's a dictator, all these things. What's the key for Donald Trump to succeed in the general election? Is it to stay on message and focus on the border, the economy, and not get distracted? Or should he double down and get in the trenches with those who attack him and push back?
Well, I think he's at his best when he's talking about policy, because he's got a presidential record already, which none of the others do. Biden has one already, and that's a catastrophe. So my best advice to him is stay focused on policy, on the economy, how he brought it back not once but twice, once from the depths of the Obama economic catastrophe, and then again from the crisis of COVID. So he will bring the U.S. economy back a third time. Focus on enforcing the border. Focus on law and order. Focus on delivering world peace, as he did the first time. We have 4 years of empirical evidence of Trump's presidency delivering booming economy, enforced border, and world peace, right? So all he has to do is point to that and say, here's how I'm going to do it a second or even a third time going into 2025 once he's elected. You know, he is Donald Trump, so expect some mudslinging.
That's exactly right.
But the other big thing, if I were he and his campaign, I'd be focused on state by state, is election integrity. Because if this election is clean, he wins in a landslide. But the left is very creative in rigging elections. And so we've got to stay on top of it and not just fight the last war of ballot harvesting and ballot curing, but really focused on whatever, anything new that the left has planned. to try to pull the rug out from under him next week. So I would say focus on those things and then do the hard work and pray. And hopefully we will be back in office January of 25.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are cheering that moment should it happen. Monica, it's always a great honor. We always get such wisdom when we're with you. What's the best way for folks to follow you on Twitter and, of course, to get your incredible podcast?
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, it's the Monica Crowley Podcast. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts, so Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever. So please go and download that. Check it out. It's free. Subscribe, and you'll get new shows automatically. And then in terms of social media, on Instagram, I'm at Monica Crowley _. And on Twitter and True Social, I'm at Monica Crowley. So please go check me out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the best quick instant analysis I know anywhere in the world comes from your Twitter account. You do such great work, Monica. What a great honor to have you on. I don't know if we'll get a chance to talk before Christmas, but please have a Merry Christmas, and we'll get you back on before the beginning of the new year.
Such an honor and pleasure to join you as always, John. And I hope we will continue our annual tradition of having you on my podcast the first week of the year. I hope you'll join.
Count me in. I'm booking now. I'm ready.
Oh, fantastic. I look forward to that, John. Thank you.
Thanks, Monica. Have a good one.
All right, folks, don't go anywhere. When we come back, Ilya Shapiro, one of the great voices and thinkers at the Manhattan Institute, he wrote a very important column on where the line is between free speech and conduct when it comes to anti-Semitism. He'll have that next, right after these messages.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, folks, welcome back for the commercial break. As you've seen, some dramatic movement this weekend in the debate over anti-Semitism on college campuses. The head of University of Pennsylvania forced to resign over her inability to address anti-Semitism on campus and in the way she told Congress she was adjudicating it. A lot more happening on that front over the next few days. A lot of pressure building. Harvard's president also now facing some very serious questions, including also whether she was engaged in some form of plagiarism. Now, joining us right now is Ilya Shapiro. He's a senior fellow and director of constitutional studies at the Manhattan Institute. He wrote a brilliant op-ed the other day. A lot of people still talking about it. Where free speech ends and lawbreaking begins. It was in the Free Press. It was a fantastic article. Ilya, great to have you back on the show.
Good to be with you. Yeah, that has gotten a lot of traction as people still are trying to figure out the difference between speech and conduct and in which ways speech can be regulated when, you know, there's a speaker in a room or classes being disrupted and whatnot. And it's really, believe me, not rocket science. I deal with a lot of complicated legal issues. These are not.
Yeah, there is a pretty clear line, at least historically, in the courts, and I think also just in practice. Describe a little bit of where these university professors and faculty have gotten themselves in trouble, where they fail to see the end of free speech and the beginning of conduct.
Well, I think fundamentally they misunderstood the assignment. They behaved as if this was a deposition with lawyers asking them questions, and they're trying to talk a lot without saying very much and trying to avoid lawsuits and other types of liability. But instead, this is a public hearing that was guaranteed to go viral and not necessarily the moment to get into legal nuance, although if they wanted to, and especially Liz McGill, Penn's president, who is a constitutional lawyer, could have said something like, Well, of course, calling for genocide of any group is against our values, against the values of any institution of higher education. Speech alone is protected, but very quickly that can become harassment or vandalism or even assault. And those things quite obviously are against our code of conduct. But she didn't say that. She just said, well, it depends on context and I need to know more. And it was just a failure of moral clarity, fundamentally a failure of leadership, of presenting what the institution actually stands for.
Yeah, it's a pretty remarkable moment. I think a lot of people were watching and saying, oh my gosh, she totally dodged the question. And you could tell right away the Mr. Target audience the second that that answer landed. You could tell that Congress was dissatisfied about it. So there are, I think that you walked through a lot of really interesting concepts. I want to start with this phrase that has become very popular on the college campuses to chant. Actually, you sometimes hear it on the street too, from the river to the sea. It's clearly a chant that Hamas has over the years used to say it would like to eradicate Israel, remove it from its land. At what point does that become hate speech, when it's being uttered or when someone does something in conjunction with it?
Well, the question isn't when it becomes hate speech, whatever that means. Hate speech, you know, offensive speech is protected constitutionally.
Right.
Even yelling from the river to the sea is constitutionally protected. Now, it becomes a problem when, if it's an exception to the First Amendment or to university speech policies. These are private schools, so they're not necessarily bound by the First Amendment, but their policies are quite protective of speech. The problem comes when it's directed at individual people, when it becomes the incitement of violence, and there's a pretty high bar, but that may be reached in some circumstances. Or let's say that kind of rally is outside the Hillel, outside the Jewish center on campus, or outside a dorm where some Jewish students are living. Something
right.
like that can be targeted harassment, which goes against the code of conduct. And you can't just say that anywhere all the time, even if it's protected speech. Even if it's, you know, core political speech, you know, I can't go to your neighborhood in the middle of the night and with a bullhorn tell you exactly what I think about Donald Trump and Joe Biden, even though that's, you know, protected political speech. There are what are called time, place, and manner restrictions. And so that's where we get into speakers being shouted down or classes being disrupted, other university programs being disrupted. All that is against the rules, and it's not a constitutional violation to enforce those rules.
Yeah. That's it. That was the brilliance of this article. It really walked people through an understanding how an episode changes depending how it's delivered, where it's delivered, and when it's delivered. It was such a great article. I know why it got so much attention. I want to talk a little bit about the challenge that these elite universities have with diversity. And it's ironic because obviously a lot of them are DEI advocates. But when you look at the faculty at Harvard, I think 3/4 surveyed said they were either liberal or very liberal. Only 2.5% identified as conservative. In a country where we're 50-50, what are the dangers of having such a disproportionate viewpoint in the faculty?
Well, you create these isolated bubbles. And that was also part of the reason that the presidents got themselves in trouble last week, was they never talked to anyone who has different views or who doesn't use this weird academic speak to discuss issues, or for that matter, who might oppose them. There's a lot of yes men surrounding these powerful university presidents. But the lack of intellectual diversity is a real problem, particularly in areas of social science, particularly when you're discussing controversial issues. And as we've seen, this is, again, another problem that the presidents ran into is the tremendous hypocrisy. When they were trying to clean up their statements of being kind of mealy-mouthed about whether calling for genocide is okay, they talked about, well, you know, we have this broad commitment to free speech, and that's why I was hesitant in saying that it's not okay to say certain things. But that's the opposite lesson to draw. It's not that, okay, we need to tighten up the speech code to make sure more things are against the rules. It's that, you know, on October 6th, before the Hamas attack, if you were using the wrong pronoun or uttering some other so-called microaggression as a student or faculty member, you'd be thrown in the hawk for investigated for your wrong speak and your wrong think. And part of that is this very left-wing echo chamber, such that even liberal students and faculty members are afraid of misspeaking, and there's been a great chill on campus. A large part of that isn't even this story of the discrimination in hiring, such that very few faculty members, as you said, are even kind of moderately on the right, but the growth of bureaucracies, and especially these DEI bureaucracies that are antithetical to the classical liberal mission of higher education to pursue open inquiry, allow academic freedom and free speech, due process, all of these basic things that, you know, a Berkeley hippie from the 60s would have been protesting for.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's so funny. The liberals were on the other side of this debate a half century ago, and now today they often are on the other side. It's pretty remarkable. Oh, yeah, I want to take a look at the two professors who are the two school university presidents who are most in hot water. Liz McGill, of course, she steps down. There was quite a few moments in the last few days where you could kind of see that train moving. It's a little less clear what's going to happen to the Harvard professor, but you can see, or the Harvard president, you can already see a lot of people distancing themselves from Claudine Gay. And now there's this additional allegation out there of possible plagiarism or that Chris Rufo and others have put out there. What do you think is her likely fate?
So it's a bit of a different story than at Penn, because McGill had been criticized for various things leading up to that testimony. So it was kind of a building thing. And a month and a half ago, some significant donors and members of the Wharton Board of Overseers were critical and closing their pocketbooks for other things. So the testimony was really the straw that broke the camel's back. With Claudine Gay, it's a little different. It's also that she's the first Black president of Harvard, and so you have all these identitarian interests. The plagiarism, if she ends up going down, it could be that the plagiarism is what takes her down more than, you know, the board at Harvard doesn't want to be seen to be giving Elise Stefanik a victory. And,
right.
And Claudine Gay already was known as having a fairly paltry scholarship record. She was known more for being a DEI administrator, frankly, and putting in new programs to promote diversity academically and otherwise. And the Harvard board is having a continual emergency meeting now. I think something like 600 faculty members signed a letter in her support. Now, Harvard has thousands of faculty members, so it's nowhere near even the majority. But it's going to be tough, because fundamentally, the job of a president isn't to teach in the classroom. It's to be a CEO and to represent the institution. Tremendous reputational hits that Harvard has taken may be very hard to overcome to keep her in place.
Yeah. That is the key to watch. And I think that it could be that the plagiarism thing is the out for the university, right? They'll just focus on that rather than the issues of anti-Semitism and elsewhere that have kind of bubbled up in the last few days. There was a moment over the weekend. Fareed Zakaria, who we often see on CNN, who's obviously done a lot of great foreign reporting over the years, he said something very simple that I think perhaps is really profound. At this moment when people are grasping for, how do we fix this? How do we get universities back to what they're supposed to be? Fareed Zakaria wrote this. I think you may have retweeted it. But America's top universities should abandon their long misadventure into politics, retrain their gaze on their core strengths, and rebuild their reputations of centers of research and learning. Is that the prescription here? Is that what most Americans are asking of these universities right now?
That's absolutely right. And I was heartened to see Fareed say that. You know, he's on the center left. It's not just conservatives banging this drum. And indeed, not just Jewish people who have had their eyes opened to some of these pathologies in higher education. You know, even Larry Tribe at Harvard Law School, with whom I agree on very little, but he was critical of Claudine Gay. So there's a greater and growing recognition outside the fever swamps of sort of the very radical left-wing progressive activists that something is wrong and something needs to be done. And as I said, one of the biggest stories, one of the biggest reasons why this is different than what was going on, you know, when I was in college 25 years ago or in law school 20 years ago, it's not even so much the ideological ratio of the faculty or the students, but the growth in weight of the non-teaching staff, the bureaucracy, which in many of these schools, and certainly these elite schools, there are now more non-teaching staff than professors. And that changes the culture of an institution, reorienting it away from teaching and scholarship and towards indoctrination and activism.
Yeah, no, it is a real, the growth of that sort of non-teaching faculty is, I think, one of the moments that has really transformed the university landscape in such a profound way. There's another element of this, and you have done so much great work on this, as has all of your colleagues. There is a growing, I would say, hijacking of the long-held notion that America is a land of equality. We've gone from equal opportunity to equal outcome, that this equity movement now is designed to, regardless of your skill, regardless of your effort, regardless of what choices and paths you make, that somehow we're all entitled to end up in the same place. Describe how that has gotten so deeply ingrained into the universities and how it kind of affects so many of the other debates on college campuses that flow from it.
Well, it's kind of the revenge of critical theory. Critical race theory gets a lot of attention, but it's not just racial issues. It's a postmodern philosophy originated in Germany and Austria in the 30s and 40s, and then those exiles during the war brought it to Colombia and elsewhere. The crits, as they were known in the 70s and 80s, where there's no objective truth, everything is viewed through a lens of who has greater privilege, the oppressor and oppressed class, intersectionality, where different identities overlap as you're analyzing who is the underprivileged voice and things like this. And that has led to weighing of speech, not based on everyone having the freedom to do it, but those who belong to groups that are traditionally underrepresented or have been quote unquote silenced, their speech is worth more. And all of these, you know, politicized understandings that reject the classical liberal enlightenment values of whether it's free speech or due process or indeed equal opportunity, those who have certain talents or skills need to be hobbled in a certain sense. Kurt Vonnegut had a great short story, Harrison Bergeron, to that effect. But it's not equality of opportunity. It's not treating everyone equally or being colorblind. In fact, those phrases that I just used are thought of as being evidence of white supremacy somehow under these theories, these perverse ideologies, again, that are implemented by these bureaucracies and starting from orientation for incoming freshmen.
Yeah, so remarkable. Ilya, you do such great work. You testified before Congress. You've written some great books. Your book on Supreme Disorder, really how the judicial nomination process had been corrupted, is really a classic. And I think anyone who wants to understand dysfunction in Washington has to read that. But you've got a new book coming out in 2024. I think a lot of people will be excited about it because it touches on this topic and so much more. Canceling Justice, the Illiberal Takeover of Legal Education. Talk a little bit about what that is going to divulge for the American public.
Well, it's what we've been talking about here, with a focus on legal education and law schools, which are a particularly dangerous area for this to happen, because after all, lawyers are the gatekeepers of our political and legal institutions. And short of medical schools, where there's a lot of alarming stuff and it's literally a life and death situation, all of these perverse theories hitting law schools is really, much more dangerous than if we just think about English departments or sociology departments or what have you. But this book, Canceling Justice, is going to be, I don't have a pre-order quite yet. It's in the final stages of editing. It'll be out probably late summer, early fall, and I'll be doing lots of media around that. I also have a Substack, Shapiro's Gavel, where I write about these issues and judicial politics, the Supreme Court, lots of interesting things going on.
Well, you absolutely do. You are one of America's most cogent voices, and I think a voice of common sense in an era where so much of America seems to be in dire need of common sense. Elliot, what a great opportunity to have you on today. Thanks for making some sense of all the stuff going in the universities. We'll be certain to get you back on after the first of the year.
Great. My pleasure. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and take care.
Thank you, my friend. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, a podcast from Just the News. Thank you for joining. Thank you for being a part of our show. We're always so grateful for your support. And of course, go check out the holiday page at justthenews.com. You'll get some great gifts and huge discounts from Muzzle Stick to Enviro Cleanse and so many other Super Beats. And of course, Field of Greens. So many great products there. Go check it out today. All right, we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of John Solomon Reports. Until then, God bless you and God bless this extraordinary country of the United States, as he always has. Hey folks, can your IRA or 401k stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is right at our doorstep? By allocating a percentage of your retirement into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from a turbulent market and economic downturns. All you gotta do is put your IRA back on the gold standard. With a multi-trillion dollar trade deficit and ongoing geopolitical instability, experts say now is the time to make the switch. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Protect your retirement today with one simple phone call and receive your free gold and silver guide from my good friends at Genesis Gold. To do that, call Genesis Gold Group today at 800-200-GOLD Gold. That's 800-200-GOLD. And find out how you can add precious metals to your IRA. One more time, let me give you the number. It's 800-200-4653. 800-200-4653, gold. Or visit them at genesisgoldgroup.com. Genesis Gold, welcome to the John Solomon Just the News family. At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.